Chapter 100. As an auspicious omen, it is quite right to know these people. It is a very proper thing. Mr. Myrtle's is a name of a worldwide repute. Mr. Myrtle's undertakings are immense. They bring him in such vast sums of money that they are regarded as national benefits. Mr. Myrtle is the man of this time. The name of Myrtle is the name of the age. Pray do everything on my behalf that is civil to Mr. and Mrs. Gowan, for we will certainly notice them. Apostrophe, this magnificent accordance of Mr. Dorrit's recognition settled the matter. It was not observed that Uncle had pushed away his plate and forgotten his breakfast, but he was not much observed at any time, except by little Dorrit. The servants were recalled, and the meal proceeded to its conclusion. Mrs. General rose and left the table. Little Dorrit rose and left the table. When Edward and Fanny remained whispering together across it, and when Mr. Dorrit remained eating figs and reading a French newspaper, Uncle suddenly fixed the attention of all three by rising out of his chair, striking his hand upon the table, and saying, "Brother, I protest against it." ... If he had made a proclamation in an unknown tongue, and given up the ghost immediately afterwards, he could not have astounded his audience more. The paper fell from Mr. Dorrit's hand, and he sat petrified, with a fig halfway to his mouth. "Brother," said the old man, conveying a surprising energy into his trembling voice, "I protest against it. I love you. You know I love you dearly. In these many years I have never been untrue to you in a single thought. Weak as I am, I would at any time have struck any man who spoke ill of you. But, brother, I protest against it." ... It was extraordinary to see of what a burst of earnestness such a decrepit man was capable. His eyes became bright, his gray hair rose on his head, markings of purpose on his brow, and face which had faded from them for 25 years, started out again, and there was an energy in his hand that made its action nervous once more. "My dear Frederick," ... exclaimed Mr. Dorrit faintly, "what is wrong? What is the matter? ... How dare you," said the old man, turning round on Fanny, "how dare you do it? Have you no memory? Have you no heart?" ... Uncle? ... cried Fanny, affrighted and bursting into tears, "why do you attack me in this cruel manner? What have I done?" ... ... returned the old man, pointing to her sister's place. "Where's your affectionate, inviolable friend? Where's your devoted guardian? Where's your more than mother? How dare you set up superiorities against all these characters combined in your sister? For shame, you false girl, for shame." ... I love Amy, cried Miss Fanny, sobbing and weeping, "as well as I love my life better than I love my life. I don't deserve to be so treated. I am as grateful to Amy, and as fond of Amy, as it's possible for any human being to be. I wish I was dead. I never was so wickedly wronged. And only because I am anxious for the family credit." ... To the winds with the family credit. ... cried the old man, with great scorn and indignation. "Brother, I protest against pride. I protest against ingratitude. I protest against any one of us here who have known what we have known, and have seen what we have seen, setting up any pretension that puts Amy at a moment's disadvantage, or to the cost of a moment's pain. We may know that it's a base pretension by its having that effect. It ought to bring a judgment on us. Brother, I protest against it in the sight of God." ... As his hand went up above his head and came down on the table, it might have been a blacksmith's. After a few moments' silence, it had relaxed into its usual weak condition. He went round to his brother with his ordinary shuffling step, put the hand on his shoulder, and said, in a softened voice, "William, my dear, I felt obliged to say it. Forgive me, for I felt obliged to say it. ... and then went, in his bowed way, out of the palace hall, just as he might have gone out of the Marshalsea room. All this time Fanny had been sobbing and crying, and still continued to do so. Edward, beyond opening his mouth in amazement, had not opened his lips, and had done nothing but stare. Mr. Dorrit also had been utterly discomfited, and quite unable to assert himself in any way. Fanny was now the first to speak. "I never, never, never was so used." ... she sobbed. There never was anything so harsh and unjustifiable, so disgracefully violent and cruel. Dear, kind, quiet little Amy too, what would she feel, if she could know that she had been innocently the means of exposing me to such treatment? But I'll never tell her. No, good darling, I'll never tell her. ... This helped Mr. Dorrit to break his silence. "My dear," said he, "I approve of your resolution. It will be much better not to speak of this to Amy. It might distress her." No doubt it would distress her greatly. It is considerate and right to avoid doing so. We will keep this to ourselves. But the cruelty of Uncle. Cried Miss Fanny. "Oh, I never can forgive the wanton cruelty of Uncle." My dear, said Mr. Dorrit, recovering his tone, though he remained unusually pale, "I must request you not to say so. You must remember that your uncle is not what he formerly was. You must remember that your uncle's state requires great forbearance from us, great forbearance." I am sure, cried Fanny, piteously, "it is only charitable to suppose that there must be something wrong in him somewhere, or he never could have so attacked me, of all the people in the world." Fanny, returned Mr. Dorrit in a deeply fraternal tone, "you know, with his innumerable good points, what a wreck your uncle is. And I entreat you by the fondness that I have for him, and by the fidelity that you know I have always shown him, to draw your own conclusions, and to spare my brotherly feelings." This ended the scene. Edward Dorrit Esquire, saying nothing throughout, but looking, to the last, perplexed and doubtful. Miss Fanny awakened much affectionate uneasiness in her sister's mind that day by passing the greater part of it in violent fits of embracing her, and in alternately giving her brooches, and wishing herself dead. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.